This lecture, Men Only, by R. Wells, is the 10th of 20 lectures supplied to members of Quattro Coronati Correspondence Circle on audio cassette in 1989. Worshipful Brother Don Ray, the preceptor of the Linford Lodge of Research, was given permission for the transcription and including on the Linford website in July 2021. Copyright of the audio material is retained by Quattro Coronati Correspondence Circle.
Why is Freemasonry under the United Grand Lodge of England restricted to men only? It is a question that is frequently raised, and the only way to understand that situation and to avoid hasty conclusions is carefully to examine the roots of organized Freemasonry, as well as the behavior which was built into it from conduct required and encouraged amongst stonemasons and the trade guilds in the 16th century and even earlier. The strongest influence came from the far-fetched and so-called history of the Mason craft, which was recorded in manuscripts that were handed down for the instruction and improvement of its members. In those, the biblical connection claimed for the craft is provided by stories from the Holy Book. They describe the founding of the liberal arts and sciences. They fostered interest in all that would assist towards a code of behavior for masters, craftsmen, and apprentices alike. The manuscripts included what were known as the Old Charges, and possession of a copy afforded authority for such a group with that common interest to meet together. It spread into the period when men other than stonemasons were accepted, as was shown by this item, included in a manuscript dated in the mid-17th century. No person of what degree soever be accepted a Freemason unless he shall have a lodge of 5 Freemasons at ye least, whereof one to be a master or warden of that limit or division wherein such lodge shall be kept, and another of the trade of Freemasonry. The phrasing in that manuscript gives ample evidence of guild influence in the use of the terms master, warden, limit or division, the last one being taken to mean ward. It shows that a lodge in those terms was not regular unless one of its members was in the trade or the craft. In order that operative stonemasons could not plead ignorance of the old charges, they were read out at all assemblies, which catered for the period when the means of communication was generally through the church and education, as such, was through catechism. Written to be the most effective medium in that case. From 2 such manuscripts, one dated 1583, and the other with an attributed dating period of the mid-17th century, both of them classified as Grand Lodge manuscripts numbers 1 and 2, respectively, the following samples are of interest. To be true to God, the Holy Church, and true liege men to the King and the Crown. The apprentice to be able of birth, that is to say, freeborn, and whole of limb, as a man ought to be. To come and assemble once in a year, to take counsel in their craft, how they may work best to serve their lord and master for his profit and their own credit, and to correct such as have offended. You shall not take your neighbor's wife villainously, nor his daughter, nor his maid, to use ungodly. You shall not carnally lie with any woman that is belonging to the house where you are at table. You shall not marry or contract yourself to any woman during your apprenticeship. It was from a collection of those old charges in manuscript that in 1720 Whilst he was Grand Master, George Payne compiled the General Regulations for Freemasons under the jurisdiction of the Premier Grand Lodge, formed in 1717. With their sanction, the Reverend James Anderson, in 1723, published the first printed Constitutions of the Freemasons, as it was called, claiming that he had reduced the ancient records and immemorial usages of the fraternity and digested them into this new method with several proper explications for the use of the lodges in and about London and Westminster. Now, in that book is a rather neglected item by Masonic historians. It is the official approval given by Philip, Duke of Wharton, Grand Master, J. T. Desaguliers, Deputy Grand Master, the Grand Wardens, and the Master and Wardens of particular lodges. It appears under the title Approbation, and here is the last paragraph. And we ordain that these be received in every particular lodge under our cognizance as the only constitutions of free and accepted Masons amongst us, to be read at the making of new brethren, or when the Master shall think fit, and which the new brethren should peruse before they are made. Anderson summarized the qualifications for membership of the craft, and he produced the following. The persons admitted members of a lodge must be good and true men, freeborn, and of mature and discreet age, no bondmen, no women, no immoral or scandalous men, but of good report. The exclusion of women was specific. In the rather far-fetched history that was not only copied from the old charges by the Reverend Anderson, but even expanded, reference was made that the kings of England had always encouraged the Mason craft, upon which he commented, from whence sprang the old toast among Scots Masons, God bless the king and the craft. He included the apocryphal story of the apprehension shown by Queen Elizabeth I regarding the assemblies that were held by the Masons, and how she sent certain noblemen to the city of York to investigate, who, on their return, dispelled her fears. Anderson stated, the learned and magnanimous Queen Elizabeth, who encouraged other arts, discouraged this, because being a woman she could not be made a Mason, though, as other great women, she might have employed Masons. Landmarks in Freemasonry have never been officially promulgated, although, over the years, many brethren have compiled lists of varying lengths. However, the restriction of the craft to free men of mature age and of good report has always been one of them. Even though brethren in regular lodges remained staunch and faithful to their brotherhood, they were gallant and gracious in their consideration for the ladies, particularly in the age of elegance in Georgian England and the courts of Europe. Ample evidence is available to show that the initiate received two pairs of white gloves, one of which was for presentation to the lady of his choice. We have an interesting account of this portion of ceremonial in a French ritual exposure, The Mason Unmasked, that is to give it the English translation of the title. It was published in 1751. Put on these gloves, their whiteness is a symbol of purity, and of innocence. This other pair is for a lady's use. You will present it to the one who holds the first place in your heart. We wish by that to prove to the fair sex that we do not lose sight of them even in our mysteries. If we do not open our doors of this worthy temple to them, It is because we fear their allurements and the power of their charms. Boredom in court circles throughout the capitals of Europe, especially in Paris, caused the ladies to turn their attention to various indulgences, embracing frolics and skits that involved initiation ceremonial, and among them, Freemasonry was by no means neglected. In 1738, the papal bull In Eminente, denouncing Freemasonry, gave opposers to the craft every opportunity to represent it as a danger to society in general, and the Church of Rome in particular. It was during that period that various assemblies came into being that enabled ladies and gentlemen to meet together in varieties of Freemasonry, then to be classified as co-masonry, adoptive masonry, and androgynous Freemasonry. Such practices provided an exercise which at first was patronized at high social level, but later became an excellent avenue for certain personalities to campaign for various causes, including equality in sociological fields. They were to treat it as a meeting ground for leaders and extremists of both sexes, and a number of freethinkers emerged from its ranks. In that form, it remained comparatively parochial and unorganized. But in 1893, a self-erected Grand Lodge of Co-Masons applied to the Grand Lodge of France for an exchange of fraternal relations, only to be met with a firm and positive refusal. That Grand Lodge of Co-Masons lasted only 3 years, but its work had left an impression, and the few lodges from which it stemmed remained in existence. It was in 1902 that the first Lodge of Co-Masons was formed in London, and that importation from France soon snowballed. Within a few years, some of its members became uneasy regarding the course then being taken by their governing body in Paris, and various members resigned to form themselves into the Order of Ancient Masonry. But it was still an association for men and women. On the 5th of June 1908, they formed another Grand Lodge, with a Reverend Brother as Grand Master. He was the first and only male Grand Master, and held office for 4 years before retiring through ill health. His successor commenced the continuing line of female Grand Masters. About 10 years later, it was decided to restrict admission to women only, but to allow existing male members to remain. Within a short period, the title was changed to the Order of Women Freemasons. But the form of address as brother was maintained, the term sister having been discontinued soon after their foundation in 1908. It is of some interest to note that the Royal Arch degree became the subject of division in their ranks. Some of the members wished to include the Royal Arch in their system, but they failed to get sanction from the Grand Lodge, and that caused them to break away and then form the first lodge of yet another order, which grew into the Honourable Fraternity of Ancient Freemasons. And thus, there are two lodges of women Freemasons running in parallel, making a carbon copy of the moderns and the ancients of the 18th century. But in this case, the time for a union between them has yet to come, for they still remain separated. In an attempt to obtain recognition in 1921, the Order of Women Freemasons sent a petition to the United Grand Lodge of England, which drew the following reply from Sir Philip Colville Smith, the Grand Secretary. It is impossible for the Board of General Purposes to recommend to Grand Lodge the prayer of the petition, and it will continue to exercise its disciplinary powers towards any member working under the English jurisdiction, who violates his obligation by being present at or assisting in assemblies professing to be Masonic which are attended by women. That decision was no more and no less than reinforcement of what had been derived from the old charges, digested by Anderson and adopted by the Premier Grand Lodge in 1723. Captain George Smith, Inspector of the Royal Military Academy at Woolwich, at varying times was elected to the three Grand Principal's chairs in Grand Chapter, appointed Provincial Grand Master in and over the province of Kent in 1777. He was a leading figure in Freemasonry and a prominent worker for various reforms, but it would seem that he was much before his time when he attempted to pave the way for a union of the two Grand Lodges before any real negotiations had even been considered. Even though sanction for his book had been refused by Grand Lodge, he went ahead, and in 1783 he published The Use and Abuse of Freemasonry. It included a chapter under the heading Ancient and Modern Reasons Why the Ladies Have Never Been Admitted into the Society of Freemasons, and the following are two extracts from that section of his book. As there is no law, ancient or modern, that forbids the admission of the fair sex amongst the society of free and accepted Masons, and custom only has hitherto prevented their initiation. Consequently, all bad usages and customs ought to be annihilated, and ladies of merit and reputation admitted into the society, or at least be permitted to form lodges amongst their own sex, in imitation of those in Germany and France. Later in the chapter, he wrote, "From what has been advanced, not one doubt remains, but the ladies may and have an undoubted right to be admitted as members of the most ancient and most honourable society of free and accepted Masons. Neither can any brother or set of brethren be accused of violating his or their obligation by the initiation of the ladies or in forming female lodges." Captain George Smith's outstanding Masonic career ended somewhat ignominiously, as 2 years later he was expelled from the craft for issuing what was purporting to be a certificate recommending two distressed brethren for relief. One might be led to think that it was a trivial offence, just another to add to, perhaps, an accumulation of offences, even that chapter in his book, maybe, but the official reason for his expulsion was the falsification of that certificate. Every age produces its own innovators and adapters in Freemasonry, and in consequence, authorities occasionally have to state or confirm their cause. Following a Grand Master's conference between the three sister Grand Lodges of England, Ireland and Scotland, this appeared in the minutes of the Grand Lodge of Ireland on the 1st of December 1814. The three Grand Lodges were perfectly in unison in all great and essential points of the mystery and craft, according to the immemorial traditions and uninterrupted usage of ancient Masons, and they recognized this unity in a fraternal manner. In due course, a lengthy statement, "The Basic Principles for Grand Lodge Recognition," was printed and issued by each Grand Lodge. One relevant article in that document is important: that the membership of the Grand Lodge and individual lodges shall be composed exclusively of men, and that each Grand Lodge shall have no Masonic intercourse of any kind with mixed lodges or bodies which admit women to membership. Later, the three Grand Lodges accepted another agreed statement, which was then published as Aims and Relationships of the Craft, and this quotation is from the English publication. "The Grand Lodge is aware there do exist bodies styling themselves Freemasons which do not adhere to these principles, and while that attitude exists, the Grand Lodge of England refuses absolutely to have any relations with such bodies or to regard them as Freemasons. Regular Freemasonry, as a male preserve, has been guarded by the moderns from 1717, by the ancients from 1751, and when the two joined amicably to form the United Grand Lodge in 1813, item 3 of the Articles of Union stated, "There shall be the most perfect unity of obligation, of discipline, of working the lodges, of making, passing, and raising, instructing and clothing brothers, so that but one pure and solid system, according to the genuine landmarks, laws, and traditions of the craft, shall be maintained, upheld, and practiced throughout the Masonic world, from the day and date of the said union, until time shall be no more." In some countries, particularly the United States of America, there are certain organizations that are patterned on Masonic lines and cater for all members of the family. Apart from regular Freemasonry, that is, under a Grand Lodge which is fully recognized by the three Grand Lodges, there are Grand Lodges for women Freemasons, for co-Masons, for the Order of Eastern Star, which is a similar organization for joint membership of men and women. There are various orders for girls, demole for boys, both having to be sponsored by a Masonic parent. To guard a simple heritage has been the conduct encouraged by the United Grand Lodge of England and its sister Grand Lodges. Continuity of pure and ancient Masonry, as described in the Act of Union of 1813, has been maintained, and all imitative forms placed beyond the point of recognition. It is for that reason the Board of General Purposes recommended that private lodges should impress upon their members that contact with Masons overseas and visits to lodges in other jurisdictions should not be arranged without first having ascertained from the Grand Secretary's office the existence of regular Freemasonry in the country concerned, and to obtain the address to which Masonic inquiries should be directed. It also recommended that not only should the warning be given verbally in Lodge, but that it should be printed on the Lodge summons at least once a year, in order that the injunction could be read by any non-attender. However, we live in a changing world, and Freemasons have learned to adapt over what is now nearly 300 years of activity as speculative Masons. But that speculation could not predict what the future may hold, or how the winds of change may blow to influence its course in the future, or even what the next century will bring.